Okay, thanks for being here today. I want to talk a little bit about a project that I've been doing at South Dakota State University. My name is Bill Berzonski. This is actually my student's project, but those of you that know me from prior years, I was at North Dakota State University and a winter or spring wheat breeder there, and actually working on white wheat quite a bit. So I can't quite get that out of my system, I guess. So when I go to South Dakota, I'm still working on white wheat, only on winter white wheat. When we talk about white wheat, some of the things that we really expect, of course, to be advantages of white wheat. Those of you who know about the white wheat work that's been going on know that really it hasn't taken off very much as a market, unfortunately, but it does have some advantages. The first advantage being high flour extraction. A lot of millers will tell us that maybe because the bran layer is a little bit thinner, they're able to extract more flour from that kernel to again get a higher extraction rate. Improved product color, as you can see here, relative to noodles, and also with bread, when you're using it in a whole wheat product, can include more bran, get higher fiber, and still have a nice whiter type of appearance. And then finally, improved product taste too. People tell us, of course, that have done studies and looking at the sensory type aspects of it, that it's got a sweeter type of taste, less bitter with the bran and phenolics and so forth in those products. Finally, of course, with the economic downturn, there's been a bit of a folks going away from healthier, just looking for cheaper type of products and so forth. But I think this is starting to come around too, and you may have seen in the marketplace Sara Lee's Soft and Smooth brand. If you pick this up at the grocery store, look at the side of the package. It has quite a bit, well, at least double the fiber typically of your typical white, squishy type of wheat. Okay, and that's because they've used a winter wheat, white wheat in this particular product to a certain extent to raise the fiber content. And of course, we can't be in Texas and not talk about flour tortillas. And flour tortillas would be something else to benefit from the color. And addition, of course, you can make it healthier as well with addition of the higher fiber from white wheat. The problem from a breeding standpoint as a breeder that we have is that this is a quantitative trait, meaning that it's really determined by at least three major genes. There are also some minor genes involved if you look through the literature. But basically, these are three genes that are carried on the group 3 chromosomes, chromosome 3A, 3B, and 3D. If you have all recessive for those major genes, you're going to see the most white type of kernels. If you have all dominant, you're going to see the most red type of kernels. So the problem becomes for a breeder, how do you accumulate these, accumulate them rapidly with some type of tool? And I'm sorry to say, if there's some molecular geneticists in the room, we do have some markers for these genes, but that's really not going to do the trick, particularly in early generation selection for inbreeding. So we need to look at some type of tool to enrich our populations for these alleles and possibly some of the minor alleles that are involved in this particular trait. So really, when we look at the enrichment tool in the breeder's toolbox, what do we really need for this particular tool? We need something that's easily applied to populations that are segregating for this particular trait. We need, obviously, this almost goes without saying, in the breeding circles, we need something that's going to be non-destructive to the seed, so you can make that selection, carry it forward to the next generation. You need something fairly high throughput, especially for early generation seed amounts. So we're not talking tremendous amounts of seed here, but enough so that you wouldn't want a grad student sitting there, as cheap as they are, you wouldn't want them sitting there, counting seed and categorizing things into red and white. So we need something else to help us with this particular approach. And so we also, of course, need something that's effective in enriching that population for the white genes or alleles that we were just talking about. Okay, so I've highlighted this because this is where our project is focused on, looking at this particular tool and how it has worked in terms of enriching for the white kernel characteristic. So this is what we were using. This is a machine that was produced by Tom Pearson, an engineer at the USDA in Manhattan, Kansas. It's a small type of machine. It's not a commercial large type of machine to do what we want to do. It has a camera, an imaging camera up here. It also has a seed diverter here. So it's kind of a simple principle. You've got here a hopper with your seed. It goes down a vibrating chute here, and the individual seeds go through the path of the camera. And in milliseconds, that camera will take the image, send that information to the computer, which will decide whether, based on your calibration, whether it's a white wheat kernel or red wheat kernel. And then at that point, it will either accept, depending on how you calibrated it, or reject it into this hopper here, okay, with a puff of air. When this thing's operating, it sounds a lot like a popcorn maker just because the kernel's going into these bins and the way the seed diverter is working, okay? In our calibrations, when I talk about the white sort, what we've done is calibrate it to accept the white kernels, and when I talk about the red sort, it's the rejection into that particular hopper there. This is what the machine looks like in our laboratory. Here's your camera up here, and this is because you can't see it very well. I've exploded the view a little bit here of the air seed diverter. This is the nozzle here that will give a puff of air as the seeds come down the chute and the decision's made whether it's white or red. So the objective of the study was to apply this particular sorter, this tool, to an F2 or several F2 populations. Today I'm only just going to talk about one F2 population that we've applied that to, but we're trying overall in this project to apply it to several F2 populations in our breeding program. And these populations were created from crosses between white and red winter wheat parents. And of course, as I mentioned before, what we're trying to do is determine the effectiveness of this order to help accumulate or enrich these populations for the white alleles. So here's the materials. When I first came to SDSU in 2008, I was looking for a project for the student to do with this machine. And we went through our nursery and just pulled out some of these F2 populations for white by red crosses. And this is what we have. This is what we've included in this particular study. And as I said today, though, we're just going to focus for time reasons and others because we're still gathering the data on the other populations. We're just going to focus on the Alice by CDC Falcon cross. Okay, so the white parent here is Alice, released from South Dakota State winter wheat program, and CDC Falcon, which is a red wheat out of the Canadian system, winter wheat as well. So the problem we ran into also initially was trying to figure out how we're going to validate the use of this machine. So again, not to say anything negative about molecular geneticists, but again, you're not going to hear too many genetics or breeding talks where there's not some kind of molecular aspect to it, but you will hear one here today with this talk. But when I was thinking about it the other day, we're doing exactly what molecular geneticists do with molecular markers. They find the molecular markers, use it as a selection tool, or try to in marker-assisted selection, and then try to validate that marker. And so we're trying to validate this tool. So we had to find a way to do that. And we actually tried to use a handheld colorimeter to get some readings on these after the sorts. But that really didn't work as well as the human eye. And so We actually found out, of course, that we could help out the human eye by also staining the seed, in this case with potassium hydroxide, to emphasize the contrast between the red and white. So my students actually have been using 300 total seed per sort type. When we talk about the sort types here in a few minutes, calculated the percent white seed for the parents, what we call the red sort, the unsorted, and the white sorted seed. So this is kind of a little bit of a busy slide, but this is probably the most important, really, to show what we were doing here and what we continue to do in this particular study. 2010, and realize that I'm calling this 2010 because that's the harvest year. It was actually planted in 2009 as winter wheat, harvested in 2010. So what we did is took that seed from those F2 plots, so it would actually be F3 seed at this point, and we sorted it using the sorter into a red sort, unsorted, and white sort. And then we stained and counted those and categorized them into white or red seed. Okay, we planted those out, keeping them separate as red sorts, unsorted, white sort, at several different locations, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. And then we harvested those. We tried to treat them a little bit with fungicides to keep the impact of disease and mainly disease from causing problems with the seed quality. And then we harvested them. And at this stage, of course, they would be F4 seed coming from these particular plots, stained and counted those as well. Okay, after that year, we actually took the white sorts within a location and the red sorts from within a location, combined those or mixed them, okay, and did the sorts again for the red sort and the white sort. The unsorted we just carried through from the previous year from the same location, and that's kind of important to realize as well. And then we did the same thing prior to planting and then after harvest in the staining and the counting. Today I'm just going to focus on the data from the harvest from the 2010 and 2011. Experimental design, when we had it out in the field here, pretty much what would be a split plot design, main plot being the population and those parents, and the subplots being the sort treatments. So the separate colors here would represent the main plots, and within those main plots, different treatments, sorted, unsorted, sorted white, sorted red, and the parents of that particular population. Okay. The locations that these were grown at, we had three locations, Brookings, Dakota Lakes, and Winter. Today, though, I'm just going to focus on Brookings and Dakota Lakes because the first year of the trial, we lost the Winter location. We had too much spring wheat, believe it or not, make it over the winter, so we decided not to even harvest that Winter location that particular year. And so, again, the subplots or the plots themselves were grown in four rows, approximately 4-5 feet long. And this is a shot of the Dakota Lakes back plots back in 2009, 2010. And we actually bordered it with some barley there to keep it a little bit isolated. The thing to really emphasize here is that the Brookings location is in the eastern part of the state. The Dakota Lakes is more in the western central part of the state. It's a little bit more drier climate, particularly in that western or Dakota Lakes type of area. Data analyses, we've done some simple things so far. We're going to do a little bit more sophisticated analyses as we get the rest of the data. But for right now, we've just used an unpaired two-tailed student t-test to compare the means within a location. For those particular harvest data that I talked to you about. And again, so we compared the harvest F4 with the harvest F5, 2010 and 2011 means, again, within a particular location. And again, those means were compared within Brookings and the Dakota Lakes locations. So here's the results, figure one. This is a mean percent. So again, what we did was just go back after harvest and stain those and then categorize them as either white or red seed. And if we look at the parents here from that particular population, at Brookings, here on the left, within these clusters is the 2010 harvest or the F4 population at that stage. On the right of these particular clusters is the 2011 harvest at Brookings or the F5 generation at that particular stage. So you can see significant differences, more white within the white sort. This amounts to be about 19%, significantly more. Wasn't significant for the unsorted, which is kind of what you'd expect, and no significant differences between the CDC Falcon itself or the Alice itself. Significant difference between the red sort, actually a little bit more white in the F5 generation there too, which is a little bit strange. But this is the one we really are focusing on because this is the white wheat sort, and indeed it looks like we've improved at least by about 19% the frequency or the number of white kernels in that particular coming from that particular plot. So you have two or figure two mean percent white seed harvested from Dakota Lakes. And similar type of thing, no significance for the parents between those or the unsorted, but significant differences between the white sorts in 2010, the F4 and the F5 here for the white sort and the red. This time a little bit more red, which is what I would kind of expect, as the rejected reds should be a little bit more red. But again, the main one to focus on here is that we've increased to 27% in this case at Dakota Lake. So differences between the locations in terms of what we've seen here. So to summarize, the color sorter was effective in enriching one F2 population for white kernels. The differences between the percent white from white-sorted plots harvested in years 2010 to 2011 ranged from about 19% at Brookings to about 27% at Dakota Lakes. The difference, and this kind of goes without saying from the previous bulleted point, but the difference between 2010 and 2011 white sorts was greater at Dakota Lakes compared with Brookings. And my take on that is basically because these differences may be due to the drier climate in the Dakota Lakes area. So when we sort, remember I said that we're actually sorting using the materials harvested from that location in the previous year. So I think the machine has a better contrast to make when the seed's coming from a drier type of climate than in a wetter type of climate. Stop there and take any questions. Thanks. Yeah, Scott.
What do you think the effect is of kernel vitreousness on the ability of the sorter to do it correctly?
Yeah, Scott's question is the effect of kernel vitreousness on the machine's ability to effectively sort. And yeah, Scott, I think there is an impact to that, and that's something we really should look at a little bit more because sometimes I think it's really going a little bit more on the overall brightness and not so much the color of the kernel itself, although I think the kind of program that Tom has in the computer is probably takes that into account a little bit, but yeah, I definitely see big differences. Generally, if it's softer or less vitreous, you know, it tends to be a brighter white, in my opinion.
It can sort for brightness too, because that's like really important.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent. I have to talk to Tom a little bit more about what kind of tweaks he's made to it, because he recently visited us and said he's tweaked the software a little bit too. So I don't know what kind of algorithm he has in there for looking at what kind of sorts to make, but my student who's been doing this is actually, I think, using the newer software that Tom brought us, and he actually thinks the machine's doing a better job of sorting for the whites. So And, you know, there are people that are using it also to try to sort SCABI versus non-SCABI or tombstone kernels to some effect. It seems to be working too. But yeah, there's a difference there. Yes.
I saw a recent demonstration of a color sorter doing, you know, separating white from red. Mm-hmm. And they did an initial sort to get as much red out as they could. And then they refined the settings on the machines to do a second. Is that kind of a strategy viable for what you're doing?
Yeah, it definitely is. And in fact, that's a good way to increase your stringency of selecting, and that's another thing that Tom's advised us to do. If it's really important, you know, you kind of have to balance that in your breeding program of just how long it's going to take to do, if you want to run samples several times and that. But the sorter is actually fairly quick in that, particularly for small mounts. So that's definitely a strategy you could use to enrich even more for your white kernel colors. And as an aside, the hardest thing I've been had to do in this particular project is to convince my student that this is not about purifying the seed. You know, we're not in the business of, with this particular study, just purifying the seed. We're just trying to detect the effectiveness in terms of selection and breeding. So we just want to see if it's doing what we think it'll do for selection. But certainly you could tweak it and do a better job of purifying the seed, too, as you apply those tweaks to it. Yes?
Sir, in your introductory remarks, you observed that there were three recessive genes that had markers, but I'm taking the implication that you believe there are minor genes or know there are minor genes that rendered it a quantitative problem. Mm-hmm. Is your concern in not using the markers because they are genetically insufficient, or is it operational? Or would you resolve it to a phenotypic problem?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question to get back to the markers. Let me first address the first part of your question. I think there are minor genes. There are some papers out there, one in particular from Canada, where they looked at the white kernel characteristic in a variety Argent, which was a spring wheat variety from North Dakota, and that it's a redder type of white wheat. And they, I think, talked about there being minor genes involved. If you look at the Australian white wheats, where they've had white wheats for years in developing white wheat, they tend to be much whiter than the U.S. Well, I won't say much whiter, but generally whiter than the U.S. white wheats. They've been working for years to breed white wheats, so I think they've accumulated a lot of those minor genes. To get back to your question, the markers in the right hands are useful for these particular major genes. They're genes for just these major ones. I don't think the markers will help much for these minor genes as a quantitative trait. But my reason for not really applying them more so than phenotyping is that the phenotyping is much is going to be much more quick for us. I believe, of course, in the right hands, you might be able to apply the markers fairly well. When we first started, that really was the idea, to also use markers as the validation tool for this particular project. But you also have to have the effective polymorphism between your two parents, too, with those markers, and that might not always be the case. So. Thanks.